Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today we're going to explore a really interesting question about an ancient people in a specific place, the Hurrians in the Afrin Valley in northwestern Syria.
Right. And the key thing here, the really crucial point for our discussion today, is that we are sticking strictly to the archaeological findings, the texts, the scholarship that was available before the year 2010.
Exactly. This isn't about, you know, the latest discovery. It's about reconstructing how the Hurrian presence in Afrin was understood at that specific moment in time.
And it's a challenge, definitely. Because, well, in that pre-2010 record, there's no smoking gun. There isn't, you know, a big sign saying Hurrians lived here in Afrin.
Right. No easy answers.
Not at all. We have to build the picture through inference, really carefully piecing together bits of indirect evidence, sometimes fragmentary sources.
Okay.
It requires some detective work.
Like historical detectives, but with a very specific, time-limited set of tools. So our approach today, we'll start broad, looking at the Hurrian world generally, the reach of their big state, Mitanni.
Mm-hmm. Then we'll zoom in on what the pre-2010 reports actually said about key sites in the Afrin Valley, places like Andara, Cirrus.
And we'll definitely need to talk about Alec, that nearby site. It was sort of a crucial proxy, wasn't it? Gave a clearer view of northern Syria back then.
Absolutely essential, Alec. And yeah, we should also touch on some of the more modern, maybe non-academic claims, and see how they stacked up against the evidence available before 2010.
Okay. So the mission is clear. Reconstruct the understanding of the Hurrian chapter in Afrin's history as it stood then, using only that specific source material. Let's get started.
Sounds good.
So maybe first, just give us the big picture. Who are the Hurrians, based on that pre-2010 knowledge, in the grand scheme of the ancient Near East?
Well, they were certainly seen as a major civilization, flourishing for, over 1,000 years, roughly late 3rd millennium down to the end of the 2nd millennium BCE.
A long time.
A very long time. And their influence spread wide northern Mesopotamia, southeastern Anatolia, northern Syria. They were significant players.
And they weren't just sort of there. They formed the core of the Mitanni kingdom, right? And had a big impact on neighbors like the Hittites.
A huge impact. Mitanni was essentially Hurrian in population and culture, and the Hittites. They borrowed heavily from Hurrian religion and mythology. It was a profound cultural exchange.
And one key identifier, something scholars used to track them, was their language.
Yes, exactly. Hurrian. It belongs to its own unique language family, Hurro-Urartian. It's not Semitic, like Akkadian or Hebrew, and it's not Indo-European, like Hittite or Greek. This distinct language was a primary marker for their identity.
And where did they come from? What was the thinking back then?
The general consensus before 2010 pointed towards origins in the mountainous regions to the north and east, maybe the Zagros, maybe the Armenian Highlands, the Taurus Mountains area. And from there, they expanded down into the plains of Upper Mesopotamia and Syria over centuries.
And their cultural legacy, you mentioned the Hittites adopting their gods.
Yes. Things like Teshuba, the storm god, became central to the Hittite pantheon. Hittite scribes even copied and preserved major Hurrian myths like the Kumarbi cycle. And what was really fascinating for scholars at the time were the perceived connections between these Hurrian myths and, you know, much later Greek mythology, like Hesiod's Theogony.
Interesting. So a distinct, influential culture with its own language expanding out. And their political high point was the Mitanni kingdom.
Absolutely. Mitanni emerges around, say, 1550 BCE. And for a couple centuries, it's a major power. It dominates northern Mesopotamia and Syria, standing shoulder to shoulder with Egypt, the Hittites, Babylonia, one of the great powers of the late Bronze Age.
And fundamentally Hurrian, even if the capital, Washukani, hadn't been definitively found back then.
Yes. The understanding before 2010 was that the population, the administration, the culture, it was overwhelmingly Hurrian.
But wasn't there something unusual about the rulers? The elite.
Ah, yes. That was a really intriguing aspect based on the evidence then. While the kingdom was Hurrian, the ruling class, particularly this elite group of chariot warriors called the Marianu, seemed to have Indo-Aryan names. And some treaties even invoked gods like Mitra, Varuna, Indra, Nasatya's names, with clear parallels in the Vedic texts from India.
Wow. So how did scholars interpret that back then?
The prevailing theory at that time was that a relatively small Indo-Aryan elite group migrated into the Hurrian area, maybe bringing advanced chariot technology and established themselves as rulers. But crucially, they were largely absorbed into the dominant Hurrian culture.
So they didn't impose their language or fundamentally change the Hurrian character of the kingdom.
Exactly. We see this reflected, for instance, in the Amarna letters, the diplomatic archive from Egypt. The Mitanni king wrote to the pharaoh in Hurrian, not Indo-Aryan, so the model was often described as a state with a Hurrian body and an Indo-Aryan head.
A fascinating blend, and they were definitely major players on the international stage. Diplomacy with Egypt.
Oh, absolutely. The Amarna letters confirm extensive diplomacy, gift exchanges, even royal marriages between the Mitanni and Egyptian courts. They were equals.
But it didn't last forever.
No kingdom does. The pre-2010 sources clearly showed Mitanni's decline and eventual collapse around 1350 BCE, primarily due to the rise of the Hittite Empire under their king Sipaluliuma Zoroan, who conquered much of their territory.
Okay, so that sets the broad political stage. But you mentioned getting glimpses into daily life. How did scholars using those pre-2010 sources learn about, you know, ordinary Hurrian society?
That's where a specific set of texts becomes incredibly important. The Nuzi tablets.
Nuzi. That's in modern Iraq, right? But under Mitanni influence.
Precisely. East of the Tigris, but definitely within the Mitanni political and cultural sphere in the 15th, 14th centuries BCE. And these tablets aren't grand royal histories. They're mostly private legal documents, administrative records. Mundane stuff, in a way, but incredibly revealing about society and law.
And what made them stand out so much in the scholarship before 2010? Why were they discussed so heavily?
Because they showed these really striking parallels to social customs described in the book of Genesis. For many scholars at that time, these Nuzi texts seemed to provide a concrete historical context for the patriarchal narratives, suggesting they reflected authentic second millennium BCE practices.
That is fascinating. What kinds of parallels are we talking about?
Well, several key things. For instance, the practice of childless couples legally adopting a servant, often a trusted one, to ensure they'd be cared for in old age, and making that servant their primary heir if no natural son was born. This provided, for scholars then, a direct legal background for Abraham's relationship with Eliezer of Damascus.
Okay, I see the connection. What else?
The practice of surrogacy through a handmaiden. Some Nuzi marriage contracts explicitly stated that if the wife remained barren, she was obligated to provide her husband with a handmaiden to bear children, and those children would legally be considered the primary wife's. This was seen as directly reflecting the story of Sarah, Hagar, and Abraham.
Right, and you mentioned household gods, teraphim.
Yes. This was another big one. The Nuzi texts showed that possession of the family's household gods, called Ilani in Akkadian, which seemed to equate to the biblical teraphim, could have real legal weight, particularly concerning inheritance rights. Sometimes possessing them was almost like holding the title deed to the family property.
Ah, so that explains Rachel stealing Laban's teraphim in Genesis. It wasn't just petty theft. It might have been a legal maneuver.
Exactly. That was the interpretation at the time. It potentially secured Jacob's claim to a share of Laban's inheritance, explaining why Laban was so frantic to get them back. It wasn't just about the idols themselves. There was also the wife's sistership status, where a woman could be adopted as a sister by her husband, giving her higher social standing and protection. This was offered as a possible context for Abraham and Isaac passing their wives off as sisters in certain situations.
Wow. Those Nuzi texts really opened up a window, didn't they? So even though Nuzi itself wasn't in Syria, the idea was these customs were widespread in the Hurrian world.
Precisely the thinking before 2010. Nuzi was part of that broader Hurrian-Mitanni cultural sphere. So the assumption was that the social and legal norms found there would likely have been very similar in other Mitanni-controlled regions like northern Syria, including the Afrin Valley. Nuzi provided the best available model for that society.
Okay, moving closer to Afrin then. What did the sources available before 2010 tell us specifically about Mitanni's control over northern Syria? Was Afrin definitely considered part of their territory?
Unequivocally, yes. Based on the textual evidence available then, the Afrin Valley was seen as firmly within the political and cultural orbit of the Hurrian-dominated Mitanni kingdom during its peak in the late Bronze Age.
Their empire stretched right across, didn't it? Zagros to the Mediterranean.
It did. Controlling vital trade routes was key. And we have records, textual evidence from that period, mentioning numerous major Syrian city-states as being vassals of Mitanni, places like Aleppo, Alaka, Karshumish. They clearly controlled the heartland of northern Syria.
And the Amarna letters confirmed their status.
Confirmed it powerfully. The Mitanni king addressed the Egyptian pharaoh as brother, signifying equal status. This underscored their dominance in northern Syria, the region buffering the Hittite and Egyptian spheres of influence.
And Afrin's specific location played a role in this thinking.
It had to. Geographically, the Afrin Valley sits right between major centers known to be under Mitanni control. like Aleppo to the east and Alok to the southwest. It's also on a natural corridor leading towards Anatolia, the Hittite heartland. Controlling that valley wasn't really optional for Mitanni if they wanted to secure their western frontier and trade routes. So the conclusion before 2010 was that it was an integral part of their Syrian domain.
So politically, geographically, the assumption was Afrin was deep inside the Hurrian-Mitanni sphere. Now, let's dig into that proxy site you highlighted, Alok. Why was it so critical for understanding Afrin based on the pre-2010 reports?
Alalak, or Tel Achana, is just southwest of the Afrin region. And at that time, it offered the best archaeological and textual snapshot we had of northern Syrian society during the Mitanni period. Its political connection was explicit. The famous statue of King Idrimi, found there, actually names the Mitanni king Peritarna as his overlord.
So definitely a Mitanni vassal state. And the tablets found there, what did they reveal?
They were crucial. Analysis before 2010 showed a very high frequency of Hurrian personal names in the texts. And importantly, these weren't just names of rulers or elites. They appeared at all levels of society documented in the records. This strongly indicated a significant integrated Hurrian population element, not just a foreign ruling class.
More than just names, though, right? There was linguistic evidence, too.
Yes, and this was perhaps even more compelling at the time. The administrative language used in the Alok tablets was Akkadian, the lingua franca of the era. But the Akkadian written there showed heavy interference from Hurrian. Scholars called it Hurro-Akkadian, meaning Hurrian vocabulary, grammar, sentence structure were constantly bleeding into the written Akkadian. This strongly suggested that for many of the scribes, and likely for a large portion of the general population, Hurrian was their native spoken language, their vernacular, and it was influencing how they wrote in Akkadian.
So, putting it together, Alok, right next door to Afrin, had a mixed population with a strong Hurrian element, likely speaking Hurrian day to day, all under Mitanni rule.
Exactly. And the argument prior to 2010 was that this provided a very reliable basis for extrapolating the demographic and linguistic situation to the immediately adjacent Afrin Valley during the same period. There's no major geographical barrier. It seemed highly improbable the population makeup would be drastically different just a few kilometers away.
Makes sense. And what happened when the Hittites eventually took over the region from Mitanni around 1350 BCE? Did the population change?
Not fundamentally, no. The existing population, this mix of Hurrians and older Semitic groups like the Amorites, largely remained in place. What changed was the political overlordship. This transition under Hittite rule is what led to the emergence of that hybrid Syro-Hittite culture in the following centuries, where the Hurrian element became one foundational part of this new regional identity.
Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rudvash Hannah. Sound of movement. Maybe a gentle clink of cups. That smells wonderful today, Hannah. Is this the one with the extra cardamom? Let me see. Oh, it's lovely. Perfectly sweet today. Not bitter like sometimes. Really hits the spot. Thank you.
Takes a sip. Very good indeed. A welcome pause. Ready when you are.
Absolutely. Okay. Chai break concluded. Fortified and ready. So we established, based on that pre-2010 regional picture, a strong likelihood of a significant Hurrian presence in Afrin under Mitanni. Now, let's pivot to the physical evidence, the archaeological footprints within the Afrin Valley itself, as understood from reports before 2010.
Right. Moving from the broader context and inference to actual material remains found in Afrin, as interpreted back then. The most prominent site, undoubtedly, is the Ain Dara Temple.
South of Afrin City. That impressive structure with the giant footprints, right? Dated roughly 1300 BCE down into the Iron Age.
That's the one. Now, the primary identification in pre-2010 scholarship linked Ain Dara mainly to the later Syro-Hittite or Neo-Hittite period cultures. Its iconography, the lions, sphinxes, mountain gods, fits well within that known artistic tradition of northern Syria and southeastern Anatolia in the Iron Age.
But there was an architectural angle, wasn't there? Something potentially connecting it to the earlier Hurrian period.
Yes, exactly. A key architectural detail highlighted by some scholars before 2010, particularly those specializing in Syrian archaeology, was the temple's ground plan. They identified it as potentially belonging to the Helani style.
And the Helani style.
The Helani was a distinctive palace or temple entryway complex, often featuring columns on the porch, common in northern Syria and southern Anatolia during the Iron Age. Crucially, some scholars back then believed this architectural form might have had its origins in the preceding Hurrian-Mitanni period. The evidence wasn't conclusive, but the hypothesis existed.
Okay, so let's unpack that. If the Aindar Temple, founded around 1300 BCE, which is shortly after the Hittites took over from Mitanni, used an architectural style that might have originated with the Hurrians, what did that suggest at that time?
It suggested that the local population who built that temple, even though they were now under new Hittite political control, were still drawing upon deep-rooted cultural and architectural traditions from the Hurrian-Mitanni era that had just ended. Remember, the Alalok data points to a population heavily influenced by Hurrians. So Aindara, in this specific pre-2010 interpretation by some, was seen as a kind of architectural fossil.
A fossil, meaning?
Meaning a local Syro-Anatolian structure that represented a fusion. It showed the new Hittite political reality blending with the established cultural substrate, the Hurrian and Amorite traditions of the region's inhabitants. It demonstrated how traditions could persist through a major political transition.
So maybe not built by the Mitanni kingdom itself, but by people whose cultural memory and practices were still deeply shaped by that Hurrian era, carrying forward certain styles.
That was the line of reasoning for some scholars, yes. Now, another site in Afrin that frequently came up in discussions, often in non-academic contexts, is Siris, known today as Nebihuri.
Ah, yes, in the northeast of the district. And on this one, based strictly on the pre-2010 archaeological and historical evidence, the scholarly consensus was quite different, wasn't it?
It was unambiguous. Based only on the evidence available and accepted by mainstream scholarship before 2010, the site of Siris Nebihuri had no demonstrable connection whatsoever to the Bronze Age Hurrians.
So what did the pre-2010 evidence show about Siris?
Its history was very well established, but much later. It was founded as a Hellenistic city, probably by Seleucus Nicator around 300 BCE. Then it became an important Roman military base on the frontier, a legionary fortress for a time, and later a significant Byzantine bishopric. All the major visible ruins, the Roman theater, the necropolis, the bridge fragments, date to the Hellenistic, Roman, or Byzantine periods.
But there was this persistent idea, sometimes mentioned locally or online, linking the modern name Nebihuri back to the ancient Hurri or Hurrians.
Yes, that linkage was proposed, often based on the phonetic similarity of the names. However, the scholarly rebuttal prior to 2010 was firm and based on multiple points. First, zero archaeological evidence had been found at Siris for any settlement during the Bronze Age, the Hurrian period. Second, the name Nebihuri is actually associated with the tomb of a Muslim saint, reportedly dating to the 14th century CE, which was located inside a pre-existing Roman-era tomb structure. It was seen as a clear case of folk etymology, a coincidental name similarity leading to an unsupported historical connection.
So the massive chronological gap over 1,000 years between the Hurrians and the known history of Siris, plus the lack of Bronze Age finds at that site, that invalidated the link in the view of pre-2010 scholarship.
Correct. From the perspective of the available archaeological and historical data at that time, there was simply no basis for connecting the Hellenistic Roman Byzantine site of Siris with the Bronze Age Hurrians. It's vital, when sticking to that pre-2010 brief, to accurately represent that scholarly conclusion.
Okay, point taken. So Adara showed potential continuity of tradition, while Siris showed no link based on the evidence then. Was there anything else, any other physical find in Afrin that spoke to the Hurrian legacy from that pre-2010 perspective?
Yes, there was one other artifact, small but quite significant, the Afrin stele.
A stele, like an inscribed stone.
Exactly. It's a fragment of a stone monument, probably basalt, found near Afrin city. Mm. Dating-wise, it's placed much later in the Iron Age, maybe 9th or 8th century BCE. And importantly, it's inscribed in Luwian, one of the local Anatolian languages used in the Syro-Hittite kingdoms.
And what does it actually show or say?
It features a relief carving. The figure depicted is identified with the storm god Teshub. Now, Teshub, as we mentioned earlier, was the chief deity of the Hurrian pantheon. He was later adopted by the Hittites and became extremely important for them too, but his origins are Hurrian.
Okay. So finding a depiction of the main Hurrian god on a monument carved in Afrin, using the local Luwian language, hundreds of years after the Hurrian kingdom of Mitanni was gone,
is pretty strong evidence for the persistence of Hurrian cultural and religious influence in the region. That's how it was interpreted before 2010. It showed that Hurrian religious traditions didn't just vanish when Mitanni fell. They endured, were integrated, and remained meaningful to the local population long into the Iron Age, even after they were assimilated into new political and linguistic groups.
So the Afrin stole was seen as a local testament to that cultural fusion, a direct piece of evidence from Afrin showing the Hurrian religious legacy woven into the later Syro-Hittite cultural fabric.
Precisely. It's a key piece connecting the Bronze Age Hurrian past to the Iron Age reality in that specific valley, based on pre-2010 finds.
So the overall picture emerging from this pre-2010 evidence suggests the Hurrians were definitely a major presence in Afrin during the late Bronze Age as part of Mitanni. But what happened to them as a distinct people after that, after the Bronze Age collapse around 1200 BCE?
The understanding based on those sources was that they didn't simply disappear overnight. Instead, they were gradually assimilated, absorbed into the larger populations of the states that succeeded Mitanni and the Hittite Empire in the region.
Absorbed into which groups?
Primarily into the populations of the Sardo-Hittite or Neo-Hittite kingdoms that emerged in northern Syria and southeastern Anatolia, also into the growing Aramean populations and further east, absorbed by Assyrians, and perhaps contributing to the ethnogenesis of the Urartians and the Armenian highlands. Their distinct political and ethnic identity as Hurrians faded over time.
But their culture left a mark. It didn't just vanish with their name.
No, absolutely not. Their cultural legacy persisted, largely through this process of syncretism blending. We see it most clearly in religion. Major Hurrian gods, like Teshub, weren't forgotten. They were integrated into the pantheons of these successor cultures and continued to be worshipped. Hurrian myths and rituals also influenced later traditions.
And then Afrinsdale is a perfect local example of that religious legacy surviving assimilation.
Exactly. It shows Teshub still being venerated locally centuries later. And we also have the linguistic evidence we talked about, that Hurro-Akkadian substrate found across northern Syria in texts from Alok and elsewhere. Prior to 2010, this was seen as powerful, albeit indirect, evidence of a widespread, originally Urian-speaking population whose language left traces even after they adopted Akkadian or later Aramaic or Luwian. That included Afrin by reasonable inference.
So, the Hurrian story in Afrin, reconstructing it only from that pre-2010 evidence, is really one of political integration under Mitanni, followed by Hittite rule, and then a long, slow process of cultural fusion and eventual assimilation into later groups, but leaving behind these detectable echoes.
That sums it up very well. It's a narrative of transformation and endurance, not sudden disappearance.
Okay, let's try to bring this all together then. Based specifically on the source material available before 2010, what's the most accurate, nuanced picture we can paint of the Hurrians in the Afrin Valley?
Well, based only on that body of knowledge, you'd have to say there was high confidence in a significant Hurrian population presence in the Afrin Valley during the late Bronze Age, certainly from about 1550 down to maybe 1200 BCE, first under Mitanni rule, then under the Hittites. This was inferred strongly from the regional context, especially Alak and the Nuzi parallels and Afrin's undeniable strategic position within the Mitanni realm.
And there was evidence that elements of their culture persisted long after.
Yes. The Afrin Stele provides the clearest piece of direct, local evidence for the endurance of Hurrian religious traditions well into the Iron Age. And then there's the Ain Dara Temple. The interpretation by some scholars at the time linked its potential Hamani architectural style back to possible Hurrian Mitanni origins, suggesting a persistence of building traditions too, though that was perhaps more debated.
And crucially, just to reiterate for clarity regarding that specific site, Siris or Nebi Huri.
The pre-2010 scholarly consensus, based squarely on the available archaeological and historical data from that time, decisively rejected any link between that Hellenistic Roman Byzantine site and the Bronze Age Hurrians. The chronological gap and the complete lack of Bronze Age evidence at Siris itself were considered insurmountable obstacles to the claims, based on the name similarity.
Right. Got it. So what does this reconstruction, this picture built solely from the pre-2010 sources, what does it really tell us? What's a final thought for you, the listener?
I think the story of the Hurrians in Afrin, as it was understood back then, is a powerful reminder of how cultural identity works over the very long term. Peoples and their labels aren't static. They shift, they merge, they influence each other, and they can persist in really subtle and unexpected ways across millennia.
So even when a distinct name like Hurrian fades from the everyday historical record,
their legacy can continue. It can leave these echoes in language patterns, in architectural choices, in religious beliefs, like we saw with Teshub on the Afrin Stele. Mm-hmm. And it takes careful, patient study of the past, using the evidence available at any given time, to try and hear those echoes. It shows that history is layered and cultures blend in complex ways.
That's a fantastic point to end on, those subtle echoes persisting through time.
Indeed. The past is never truly gone.
Well, thank you for joining us for this exploration, sticking strictly to the historical sources available prior to 2010. It's been a fascinating exercise in understanding how historical pictures are built piece by piece based on the evidence at hand.
And it naturally makes you wonder, doesn't it, how new finds or perhaps different interpretations of existing evidence might add even more layers or change parts of that picture in the years since 2010.
A question for another time, perhaps. Until next time on the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.